This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave.
It's the World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe, one country at a time. Tonight, you've got Dean, Heath, Damien, and myself, Matt. We're taking you around the world and stopping off in the Arctic region of Canada to look at life as an Indigenous Canadian, the Inuit. What is it like when you are seemingly the only gay in a very cold village and your elders speak out and say that gays don't exist in Inuit culture? Do you hide? Do you simply shrug and accept it? Or do you speak out? To answer those questions, tonight we're talking to Robbie Watt, the founder of a Facebook page for LGBT and queer Inuit in the Arctic. This is the story of the power of one and the ripple effect that is being felt after Robbie spoke out. A warning, you will be inspired. Here's a taste.
My father, I finally had a chance to speak with him. And I said, well, Dad, I just couldn't be complacent about this anymore. And he goes, I know. And I'm very, very proud of you. Your mom and I are very proud of you. So it was the first time that I actually heard my mother and my father being so proud of me, and to hear that sincere, unconditional feeling. Today, I thought I was just coasting along. Now I feel I'm ready to soar, ready to fly and do everything I can and possibly can do.
Joy. We are in the Indigenous part of Canada. We're looking at the topics around Indigenous life in Canada. So it's the Inuit culture, which is basically based around the Arctic regions, very cold northern regions of Canada, but it also moves across to United States and Greenland in their northern territories. And you'll hear us mention two things tonight, Inuit being the culture, but if we're talking about a single person, it's called Inuk. So we'll be speaking to Inuk Robbie tonight. Very early on, when European settlers arrived in the north of Canada, they brought with them much disease and caused death to the local tribespeople. Any similarities you can think of there?
No, none at all. Not really. It never goes well, does it?
Settlers, though, yay! One of the British expedition leaders actually made reports saying that they were causing some issues there. So right back in the 1820s, those sorts of feelings were coming through. Stretch right ahead to after the Second World War, the area, because of the Cold War with Russia, actually became quite important from a defence point of view.
Strategically important because of its convenient location close to, Eastern Russia, or Soviet Union, rather.
And Canada's Prime Minister in 1953 came out and publicly admitted, he said, apparently we have ministered the vast territories of the North in an almost continuing absence of mind. Again, this recognition which, for us here in Australia, reconciliation didn't really start until a couple of years ago, but even from the 1950s, there was this recognition that we're not looking after our Indigenous cultures very well.
There's all these people living up there, but we don't know who they are or what they do.
Now, there is a story of some high schools. So one of the government programs was to put in place some high schools to particularly look after the Inuit cultures. And it became a bit of a wake-up call for the Inuit and stimulated the emergence of a new generation of activists. So they basically were able to see that there were people listening and they could start to have a voice and make some changes.
Now, there's been some changes since then. We've got Inuit cabinet members at the federal level. So in October 2008, Leona Aglukwak was appointed as Minister of Health, becoming the first Inuk to hold a senior cabinet position.
It's still a long time, though, isn't it? 2008, that's, only 5 years, 6 years ago. It
did take quite a while.
And there are, interestingly, marital customs. The Inuit are not strictly monogamous. Many Inuit relationships are implicitly or explicitly sexual. So there are open marriages, polygamy, divorce, and remarriage as we know it.
Well, it surprises me that they weren't considered, that didn't sort of take over more aspects of Canadian society.
Now, they have an Arctic Winter Games. Since 1970, they hold this featuring traditional Inuit sports and events so that they can maintain their culture. That's a good idea.
That is a good idea. But what are their traditional sports, I wonder?
Now, there are actually some LGBT themes in mythology within the Inuit culture. So, shamanism, the first two humans were actually both male.
Well, the same-sex couple they desired company and decided to mate. A story as old as time, and this sexual encounter resulted in pregnancy for one of them, Umarantuqaq. As he was physically not equipped to give birth, a spell was cast that changed his sex, giving him a vagina capable of passing the child. There you go. And the now female Umarantuqaq was also responsible for introducing war into the world via magic in order to curb overpopulation. Once again, the women always get the blame.
And again, you get these themes of Indigenous cultures where, you know, sex and gender is much, much more fluid than the Western cultures. So, way back in time, sexuality wasn't really an issue.
Well, with all those furs, how would they know?
Indeed.
Boa noite. This is David from Brazil, listening to World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Where tonight we've stopped off in the Arctic region of Canada. Now, this issue came to our attention after during the Sochi Olympic Games, some town halls around Canada flew the pride flag as a show of support for LGBT people in Russia. It caused a bit of a stir in that one of the local councillors in the Arctic region spoke out against that and said it wasn't the right thing to do. It then snowballed and went to the Inuit leaders, and let's find out what they said.
Joy!
I guess few Australians would have any idea of what being gay and Inuit is like. Can you tell us a bit about Inuit culture and what the culture says about homosexuality?
Well, I can only talk about today's culture, and it's pretty, I would say that being gay, being an Inuit gay man in today's society has become quite hard. For reasons such as fundamentalism has reached the high Arctic, more so in the last 15, 20 years. So this fundamentalism is having a pretty negative impact for someone like myself.
So how does that play out in your daily life? You know, are you ostracized?
Well, thing is that I came out close to 20 years ago. I was close to 27, 28 years old when I came out publicly. It was hard, already hard then, mainly because I come from a family, a well-known family. And it was hard for me to come out because I really wanted to make sure that I wasn't doing any kind of damage to my father's credibility. He was a big politician, and for me to be coming out, I just felt that it would hurt him more than it hurt me. In the beginning, when I publicly came out, there were even many of my community members that just couldn't even go near me, let alone shake my hand anymore. Very quickly, things turned around where they realized that I'm still the same individual, that my sexuality really had not changed me. In fact, it was, had nothing to do with who I was. So in the last, let's say, 19 years, I've been just coasting along to a point where I was even responsible for our cultural institute, mandated by our elders from the north, even though they knew I came out. So that said a lot. But this non-verbal, how do you say, as Inuit, we tend to pick up a lot on non-verbal cues. And yes, I came out, and yes, I seemed to coast quite along quite well. I had no problems, but internally, on a daily basis until today, until recently, I've been getting these nonverbal cues where they don't really seem to accept me. I felt constantly oppressed, constantly mocked, or as we say in Inuktitut, we say mangatsijok, meaning someone who talks behind your back. That feeling was constantly there.
The Inuit community has elders. What do the elders think? Is there a generational divide in terms of sexuality?
I think there's a generational divide. I think our elders today are pretty much, I wouldn't say assimilated, but they have taken in this very fundamentalistic view on life where everything's conditional now. It's rare to see a what I call the real kind of elder that I want to just sit down and have a chat with. Those are the kind of elders that don't judge. So my grandmother's generation and grandmothers older than her, my great-grandmothers, for example, didn't judge. It was not, they knew that it was not their place to judge.
Now, Canada as a country as a whole is very accepting and you know, one of the world leaders in terms of LGBT rights. The Inuit community, is it just lagging behind? Can you see that things are progressing?
I'll give you an example. The Anglican Church, many of the church denominations back 10 years ago, less than 10 years ago, all started accepting the fact that a marriage is gonna be allowed to happen in their churches. Now, this was being discussed down south. I'm saying south meaning in the urban centers, Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver. It was a big discussion. There was a petition in one of the communities to ensure that gay marriage does not happen in the churches of the Arctic. That was 10 years ago. I don't know about now, but I think many of our population, the Inuit population, is realizing that when you condone sexuality, you're also promoting hate. I'm having a lot of hope now that there are parents of, or individuals like myself, or parents like myself, that are realizing that they cannot be conditional anymore.
Hello and goedenavond. This is Elko, listening in from the Netherlands on World Wide Wave, the latest LGBT news and current affairs on joy.org.au.
So that was the voice of Robbie Watt. He's the founder of a Facebook page supporting LGBT and queer Inuit in the Arctic. He almost is the only gay in the village.
Kind of is, really. Yeah, he's like the Dafydd of the Arctic.
And yet 20 years ago when things were, let's say, less advanced, he came out to his father. His father's a politician, high profile. Wow, that's pretty progressive.
Yeah, it would have been quite tough at the time, and probably even today, I would say.
I was interested with his comments about this. There seems to be a bit of a divide between the southern areas, i.e. the cities, the populations, and the northern Arctic area, sparsely populated, less in the way of services and support. You know, there must be this feeling of isolation.
It would be very difficult to find someone who's on the same wavelength, I think. So if you're not part of the norm, I think it would be very challenging. What struck me about what he was saying is that his story is so similar to the stories of many of perhaps Joy's listeners, and in fact people all over the world, when they're coming out and feeling isolated and ostracized. There's so many parallels there from any other culture in the entire world.
And from Canada's point of view, whilst they're progressive, there's clearly a barrier that's not doesn't appear to be quite as inclusive in terms of covering everybody in the country.
It seems to be that rural areas take a little bit longer to perhaps pick up on newer trends than urban populations. And again, that's something that seems to be very common in many of the countries we've looked at over the last few months.
He was also talking about the generational change and this concept that everything's conditional now. It's almost he's almost saying that there's been a step backwards. Like normally, the next generation, the young people, are more open, more willing to accept things like sexuality. It's not as much of an issue. But I don't know, he's sort of almost saying there's a step backwards here.
A return to traditional values. Things have gone too far.
And the influence of the church.
The church sort of pushing back a bit.
It's amazing. The services can't quite get to these rural and remote areas, but the religions can.
Yeah, that's it. Well, I guess, you know, Bibles are all digital nowadays, so it's pretty easy to bring them all up there.
We are going to hear some more from Robbie in just a moment.
This is Nikki from Canada, where everybody can get married. You're listening to the World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Tonight, you're on World Wide Wave, and we are talking about Indigenous Canadian culture, the Inuits in the Arctic. Our guest we spoke to earlier in the week is Robbie Watt. He's the founder of Facebook page for LGBT and Queer Inuit in the Arctic. And we wanted to find out how this Facebook page came about.
Joy.
Now, you said before, since coming out, your life was coasting along for about 19 years. That all seems to have changed when a rainbow flag was put up above a town hall and it caused quite a furor. Can you tell us a bit about what happened?
During the Olympics, there were many, many cities, many town halls that decided to raise the rainbow flag, going against what Russia is trying to do, which is basically condemning sexuality. And I suppose one of the town councillors, the city councillor, he's also an elder, indicated while the media was there that this was not a part of our culture. That sexuality, gays, did not exist in our culture. But instead, the mayor went ahead and he rose the flag up. About a month later, one of the leaders, one of the leaders of our land claims settlement agreement, attended a municipal meeting. And she apparently congratulated that very same city councillor for having the courage to use his, I guess, his rights in regards to his freedom of speech.
As a gay Inuk, how did that make you feel that they were coming out and saying that there is basically no gay people in Inuit culture?
I was not pissed off to that point. I was more, I got to remind them once again that that gay life, being gay, does exist amongst the Inuit, and I'm an example. And I decided to create this web site basically to once and for all tell them that no, you can't say it doesn't exist. It doesn't. It's not part of our culture because I'm part of Inuit life.
This has generated quite a lot of discussion on the issue of being gay and in Inuk. What has been the weight of the response? Are you hearing more people speaking favourably and being supportive of gay people, or more people speaking out against?
People, a lot of people that came to me personally to thank me. They were very happy that someone like myself, quote unquote, had courage. But it was not about trying to have courage. It's just I just didn't think that it was right anymore. My father, I finally had a chance to speak with him, and he said, "I have the article that was written by Nunatsiavut News about." What I had done, he basically said, I have the article in front of me. And I said, well, Dad, I just couldn't be complacent about this anymore. And he goes, I know. And I'm very, very proud of you. Your mom and I are very proud of you. So it was the first time that I actually heard my mother and my father being so proud of me. We all want to be loved by our parents. And to hear that sincere, unconditional feeling coming from your dad. Today, I thought I was just coasting along. Now I feel I'm ready to soar, ready to fly and do everything I can and possibly can do. That's the most important thing that came out of this whole thing, was the bond that I have with my parents now. I mean, 20 years ago when I came out, my father said, well, son, I probably will never understand you, but I just want you to know that I love you. That was his message when I first came out. This time he goes, I know that you just couldn't take this bullshit anymore, but I want you to know that we're very proud of you.
Since starting the Facebook page, have you been contacted by other Inuk and heard their stories, their issues about being gay and living in the Inuit community?
I do have a few that have. Some have made it a point to say in their own website or their own wall how proud they are to be gay.
And what do you hope is the future for LGBT people in the Inuit community?
There's a saying that says Inu Hatigitsianuk, basically meaning to live in harmony. My hope is that we get to learn to live with each other without condoning each other.
Robbie, speaking to us from the Arctic in Canada, thank you very much for joining us on the World Wide Wave.
Thank you very much.
This is Otan Batar from LGBT Center of Mongolia, and I'm happy to be on World Wide Wave.
You can be guaranteed that we will go to all corners of the earth to speak to people about LGBT life. That was from the Arctic region of Canada, Robbie Watt. It's amazing how this symbolic idea of just raising a rainbow flag over a town hall has caused such an uproar.
Like one piece of fabric.
And it's really, I guess one of the good things about it is that it causes discussion as well.
Look, we could probably do an entire show, or in fact a series of shows, about the many times that flags and standards have caused huge changes in history and how important they are. And it is remarkable how just one bright piece of fabric has created such a stir, isn't it?
And it was sort of when it first happened and the local councillor spoke out, it was an issue, but I guess a small one. When one of the heads of the Inuit community spoke out and supported this other councillor, the one that spoke against it, that was when it really became a much bigger issue. And even Robbie made comment that, you know, this councillor, President Kathy Tautongi, that he had worked with her before and he felt that she was his friend, but then she came out and pretty much condemned him. That's a very personal assault.
Yeah, it's kind of mean.
Mean? Do you think it's just political?
Well,
or is she just pandering to the masses?
That's sort of what I'm referring to. I think she probably knows what side her bread's buttered on, and it's easier to appeal to her current, I don't know, constituents and their views as they are currently than it is to attempt to change or educate them or amend their views by educating them to an extent about the fact that LGBTI people are not going to cause the earth to rent asunder and everyone to fall into the flames.
I love when these things happen, the creativity comes out. It's sort of like the rainbow, DIY rainbow movement that started out of Sydney when the rainbow crossing was torn up. Somebody anonymously sent rainbow-themed cupcakes to the office of the, if you like, the head of the Inuits. Isn't that great? Surprise!
I don't know. I'm not sure if I'd eat those cupcakes. What would be in them?
There is also this isn't just an isolated issue, I guess. So when same-sex marriage was being talked about in the Canadian House of Commons, the Inuit made a submission speaking against it. So there is a bit of a history there of not understanding, perhaps not supporting gay people within their community.
Well, I'm curious about the other issues in the community. What we've found time and time again on this program is that when these topics do come up, it's often due to issues with like other issues that the politicians or I suppose the people in authority are trying to distract attention from. So I'm wondering what the actual other issues are that they're trying to draw attention away from, because there's really nothing in it for politicians to raise these sort of divisive topics. I mean, I don't know, wedge politics, but how many people live in Northwest Canada? Yes, yeah. That's it. Mm. But, I mean, how many people live in Northwest Canada? I mean,
and in Canada, everybody's so nice. I, you know,
there's anyone road in Canada? Canada, Canada.
You are on the World Wide Wave, where tonight we are in the Arctic region of Canada.
Hi, my name is Kenneth. I'm from LGB Denmark. You're hearing me on the World Wide Wave.
Where tonight we've been speaking with Robbie Watt from all the way in northern Quebec. Quebec's a very beautiful area, actually. Have you been up there?
No, I haven't been to North America, but I do know that Quebec City is the only walled city in North America. So it's like a medieval castle.
It is. Mm. It's very, very beautiful. Tonight we've been speaking about Indigenous Canadians in the far north of the Arctic, and a big thank you to Robbie for speaking to us on the phone. Time to look a bit broader around the world for our worldwide wrap. Teeing off across to Ethiopia, and this is actually a place that we are tracking down somebody to speak to tell us what's happening in the area. But basically, one of the leaders of Ethiopia's Orthodox Church used their Easter message to basically say they will fight homosexuality to the end.
Wow, what a shock. I was so expecting some good news from Africa.
It's not an Easter message, though, is it?
Yeah, really? Well, the Easter message was that the sin that burnt Sodom and Gomorrah in Ethiopia not only erodes the holiness that God has bestowed upon Ethiopians, but it will bring destruction and damage rather than development and growth. To prevent this, I call upon all Ethiopians to fight this grand sin of Sodom persistently.
And happy Easter.
And happy Easter.
I thought it was about, you know, renewal, being reborn and all that. No, it's about Sodom.
I think they just like thumping the pulpit. I mean, it's hard to do that when you're saying, remember, Jesus is love. Thump. It doesn't really work.
Kind of almost needs to have somebody to hate. They actually have quite severe laws there. So same-sex acts are punishable with up to 15 years in jail.
There's lots of, if you have a look at the article online, it's homosexuality is not natural, you know, ungodly, you know, sodomy this. It's just, it's like every sort of, you know, fundamentalist Christian buzzword in one article. It's crazy.
So we're going to explore that more in a future show when we look at the Horn of Africa. Now, down closer to home, the Philippines, some good news. The Philippines police have spoken out in support of there being LGBTI police liaison officers, pretty much like the GLOWs we have, the gay and lesbian liaison officers here in Melbourne. The police have spoken out and said, yes, we like this idea. We'd like one in every station. Every station. That's actually quite progressive.
Especially for the Philippines, which seems to be getting more progressive by the day.
It's sort of been some sort of acceleration going on there. They're still in the process of studying what this would mean in terms of putting forward a bill and bringing something in. But it's a really good sign to have the police themselves speaking out and saying, yeah, no, we support this initiative.
Definitely a step in the right direction. Now, we've also got some back home, I suppose, local news. Australian football's first gay pride game will be staged next month in a landmark AFL-sponsored event led by country footballers. So organisers of the inaugural Pride Cup hope the event will help combat homophobia and show young gay players that football clubs can be safe, welcoming places.
This is something that's been brewing for a while. So this really started when Jason Ball came out. I mean, there's always been this ongoing thing about AFL players and no one being publicly out while they're playing. Jason Ball, young country player, came out and has started this whole dialogue. He's been on Joy many times to tell his story, and he goes around and educates people on anti-homophobia issues, anti-bullying within sport. what I find interesting, so there have been calls for the AFL to have a pride round, and there were talks of, you know, making it a big game with, you know, Collingwood and Hawthorn or somebody like that. It's two country teams that have got together and said, yeah, look, we're not going to wait for you, AFL. We're just going to do it.
Well, you know, listen up, Canada. So the rural area is, yeah. So, yeah, rural areas can be more progressive.
All power to them. And so it's the teams are in the Yarra Junction, and another Yarra team, Yarra Glen, are playing. And we will undoubtedly be covering that that game. To Bangladesh now. Where the Game magazine, and we spoke to Root Barn about a month ago. Root Barn is the first Bangladeshi Game magazine that's been out on the market. They've since organised a diversity parade as a part of the New Year's festivities. So basically they got people to walk in lines wearing a colour of the rainbow.
Oh,
yeah,
bless.
100 people came out and walked in and to make a show.
That's absolutely in public, which is great. Yeah, I mean, given that homosexuality is still illegal and punishable by up to a life sentence, it's pretty brave.
It's still out there. Mm. And finally, to Northern Ireland, where the Northern Ireland Assembly is getting set to debate gay marriage. They are the last of the UK countries to, well, they're the only ones at the moment that don't have gay marriage, and they're just about to start this process due to a private member's motion, which is being debated later this week.
Very interesting, to be sure, to be sure. So it's about time they caught up, I suppose, and maybe they're feeling a little bit left out.
It's been rejected a couple of times before, though, so it's not going to be an easy battle.
Well, it is a very devoutly Catholic country.
We wish them well.
Yes.
This is Ulrike Lunacek, member of the European Parliament and co-president of the Parliament's LGBT intergroup on the World Wide Wave.
And a big thank you tonight to Robbie Watt, founder of the Facebook page for LGBT and Queer Inuit in the Arctic. We are going to post that page, a link to that page, on our Facebook page. So if you go and search World Wide Wave and like us, you will get a cavalcade of international news flowing throughout the week.
And a big thank you to Harvey, Doug, Alex, Kimmy, Mako, Richard, who have joined or interacted with our Facebook page this week, which now has over 500 followers.
We cracked the 500. Woohoo!
Blast.
We'd have party blowers, but we don't.
Yeah.
Now, next week...
No budget.
No budget, that's right. We are a community radio station. Next week, we are looking at international views of Australia's human rights. And we're talking with a new non-government organisation called Remedy, who will be coming in and helping us sort through what the world thinks about us and our human rights. We'll be back same time next week on the World Wide Wave.
Thank you for listening to the World Wide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.